And we're glad to have all of you here today, and welcome to you. Now, Tom, did you figure out how many grates you'd have to put on that? But be quite a few, wouldn't it? We are in the sixth chapter of Ephesians. I want you to open your Bibles there. Really, this thought starts back up in the 22nd verse, or maybe even in the 21st verse of the chapter, because it's talking about relationships. It's talking about the home. It talks about husbands and wives. It talks about we saw last week. It talks about children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long upon the earth. And then immediately, actually for every time that Paul says something about the children, he says something about the fathers. And so in verse 4, you have, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Bring them up, don't put them down. If I were putting a title on this lesson for today, I would call it A License to Live. There's a lot of talk today about human rights, civil rights, women's rights, gender rights, individual rights. But one of the great gaps in personal rights has to do with our children. You know, until recently, and I'm talking about the last 20 years, children were not even involved in any custody hearings when there were divorces. Just the parents were only involved. And in some states, that's still so. There are children that it used to be they'd take them away from the parents if they were not fit to raise them, and they'd put them in a detention center, which would put them take their innocence away from them, put them behind fences, sometimes behind bars with delinquent children. And when anybody would protest, and you'd see this in the newspapers over the years, there'd be letters to the editor about that. They would ask, why is this being done to the children? And they would always get from the politicians the same answer that was given when it used to be you'd ask, because the homes for the elderly were terrible. At one time, I can remember when I was a boy, there were fire traps built out of wood. And if there's a fire, nobody could get out because they were invalid. Why do we treat our older people like that? Why do we treat our children? Get the same answer. Well, give me more money. If you'll give me more money, then we can do something about it. So we give more money, and we give more money, and we give more money, and it doesn't get a whole lot better. Maybe the surroundings would get better, but not the care that's there. For every command given here to children, there is a command given to parents. And the word that's translated fathers could be translated parents as a word to both of them. Children, obey your parents. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Children have a breaking point and a boiling point like parents do. Honor your father and mother. Parents, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Pater, the singular, always means father, but patron, the plural, can mean parents, not just fathers. In Hebrews 11, when it's talking about Moses, it says Moses was hidden by his parents. And it's the same word in the Greek, patron, hidden by, not fathers, because he didn't have fathers, he had father and mother that hid him. I think the same translation, parents, don't provoke your children to wrath. And this command is given, I think, the attitude that the whole community, the whole nation, if you want to say it that way, the whole world, ought to have toward children. Not one of provocation, but one of careful nurture and admonition. If you wanted to outline that verse, or outline this lesson today, it's got three simple points. Children have a right to live. Children have a right to live in happiness. Don't provoke your children to wrath. And children have a right to live a Christian life. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now let's look at that one at a time. Children have a right to live. Bring them up. You know, you wouldn't think that such a statement would have to be made in our enlightened age. If we lived in ancient Rome, they had we always sanitize these concepts with better language. And so you read in the history books about the Romans practiced exposure. What they did, if they had an unwanted baby born, especially if it were a girl, because they all wanted boys, they would just put the newborn baby out on the side of the road to die of exposure. And the Romans, actually, the city of Rome had details, garbage details, that did nothing but pick up dead babies in the morning to get them off the streets. Buildings were dedicated with child sacrifice. Take a living infant and lay it into the foundation of the building for good luck. You actually read about Manasseh doing that, one of the kings of Judah. Bring this into the 19th century India, and you could go over there, and I've never been to India, but all the way up to the end of the 19th century, you could go over there and watch mothers throw their babies into the Ganges River as a sacrifice to the gods. I read of missionaries that would go to and fight with the mothers to take the babies away from them, to keep them from throwing them into the river. We've slipped back into the dark. In 1973, this country slipped back into the dark ages when Roe versus Wade was made law in this land, and it's still law. Abortion is the issue today. Real interesting to watch the reaction to the Republican loss in this recent election. I've heard Republicans say this. The right-wing extremists have gotten control of the Republican Party, and they need to just cut them off, cut off that Tea Party, get them off there on the side, and forget about these social issues and just worry about the fiscal issues that are there. Or Republicans will never get back into power. Well, we ought not to get back in power that way in that. But children have a right to live. The abortion industry got so they discovered a legal way to practice what Daniel Patrick Monahan, the senator from New York, said is infanticide when he saw that demonstrated on a poster in the Senate. You could deliver a baby breech birth, where you pull the feet out first, and you get everything out but the head, and then the doctor reaches up in there with a pair of scissors and punches a hole in the brain, and then takes a vacuum and vacuums out the brain. 6 inches later, it would have been murder. But it's not. Partial birth abortion. Bill Clinton, for all of his inadequacies, vetoed a partial birth abortion bill. But what he said was really disturbing to me. He said, abortion ought to be rare, and it ought to be safe, and it ought to be healthy. Well, it's never healthy or safe for the baby. And all you have to do is read Jeremiah when God says to Jeremiah, "I knew you when you were in your mother's womb," to find out that that is not just a fetus in there, but it is a person that's in there from conception on. And with the invention of the sonogram, you could actually look at that. The Right to Life people put out a little movie called The Scream. Anybody see that?
October Baby is good too.
Yeah.
It's about this girl that was suffered through lived through lots of abortion.
Yeah.
And
I saw that on television. The scream shows the doctor's forceps reaching up in there and pulling the baby apart. Yeah. And you see that little fetus go. They showed that in the Senate. And senators got up and had to go out. They got sick at their stomachs watching. The public media refused to show it. They said it's too obscene to show. Well, they didn't want people to see what the truth is on that. Babies have a right to live. Bring them up. Don't put them down. 55 million babies that we know about have been killed in the womb. Since 1973. And that's being added to about 1.5 to 2 million a year in that. Children have a right to live. Children have a right to live in happiness. Don't provoke your children to wrath. Bring them up. Don't put them down. And the command is given in the Greek, where probably we better translate it, stop provoking your children to wrath. You know, not don't ever do it, but stop it. I had a deacon one time over in Fort Worth, a newly ordained deacon, and he's just one of the greatest guys I ever knew in my life. He was what you'd call a working builder. He was a contractor, built some beautiful homes over there, built a home for us, but he'd get in there and work. Every day he'd be out there working. He was a gruff old Texan. You know how old Texans are, you know. And he would just explode to somebody, on somebody. And then he said, "I feel a lot better after I got that off my chest." I said, "Yeah, but the person you exploded on doesn't feel a lot better." And I said, "Preston, you can't do that. You're a deacon. You cannot do that." He said, "Well, that's just the way I am." I said, "Well, quit it." And that's what Paul is saying here. Quit it. Stop provoking your children to wrath. I remember reading one time of a judge up in the Midwest, in a family court judge, and the father had just yelled at and pleaded, and then finally slapped the 16-year-old son across the face. The son ran out and robbed a store. And the judge said, "I wish I could put the father in jail instead of the son for doing that." And now there are laws about that in some states. Parents ought not to be overly harsh or too strict or hard on their children. It's the child's responsibility to obey, but it's the parent's responsibility to be reasonable. The word provoke means literally to enrage or exasperate, to bring out their anger. But the word also carries with it the idea of discouragement. Paul has this same conversation over in the book of Colossians in the third chapter. He will say in Colossians 3:21, fathers, don't provoke your children lest they become discouraged. Children have a right to live. Children have a right to live in happiness. Anybody old enough to remember the old song, "Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening, sugar at supper time. Won't you be my sugar and love me all the time?" When Dr. Crystal preached on this verse, he said, "We've changed that to fighting in the morning, fighting in the evening, fighting at supper time." You know? Let's just live like wildcats and fight all the time. Children have a right to live in happiness. Children have a right to live in a Christian home, a Christian environment, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, all of us know Proverbs, all parents know Proverbs 22:6, all parents my age. You know, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. And we remember, spare the rod and what? Spoil the child. Martin Luther's father took that proverb to the extreme, and he was so severe with Luther that Luther said he had a hard time as a man praying Our Father in heaven. In there, you know, how do you train up a child in the right way? Well, here are the two ingredients. You know, the Bible is so practical. Paul says in verse 4 of Ephesians 6, bring them up, and here are the two ingredients. Nurture and admonition. Nurture, the idea of training. Nurture has to do with the idea of discipline, distinguished from the idea of punishment. And admonition has to do with it. You know, back in the days of yesteryear, when people used donkeys, they would use a whip and a carrot. Well, that's pretty much what Paul is talking about. Yes, you punish disobedience, but you also have this admonition out there. And they are to be used properly in that. It's a child's responsibility to obey his parents. Whose responsibility is it to see that he does that? The parents' responsibility. Fred Zweig said to me one time when our first child was born, now, if you want people to love your children, make them mind, and do that. And you can't wait till the child is a teenager to start that. Billy Sunday said, a man that doesn't know mercy doesn't know how to be a father. It takes a lot of mercy to raise children. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pities them that fear him. There needs to be a balance between making the child mind and yet not being so hard as to provoke the child to anger. You see why parents need to be Christians? We look at these terrible things that happen in these homes. The reason they happen is the parents not Christians. And it's an evangelistic motivation for us if we want to change our country. Roe later became a Christian, a dynamic, testifying Christian. The abortionists hated to see her coming because she identified herself. And said it was just wrong. But she said, nobody told me that it was wrong. But she said, after I did it, I felt that it was wrong. Christian admonition has to do with training by word as opposed to disciplinary acts. I guess you could say the nurture is the idea of discipline, but the admonition is the idea of encouragement. And as children grow up, most parents don't spank their children anymore. They're just pounded into them over the media. Don't do that. Before that was so, I'd have parents ask me, when do you know that it's time to stop spanking your children? I said, when they get so big, you have to hurt them to make it do anything. It's time to stop spanking them. And so then what do? Well, you go with withdrawal of privilege. Or with this admonition that's there. And don't put them down by what you say, but bring them up. I can remember when I was a new Christian and we finally found a church that preached the Bible. My sister and I joined it. And it was in an old auditorium that had a wooden floor in it and didn't have an acoustic. I mean, you could hear every pin drop. And it was a slanted floor. Remember how they used to build the church? Our floor is slanted in our sanctuary now. But this was kind of severely. In fact, when I was a teenager, we were sitting back on the back row, and a little boy dropped a marble And then it hit the edge of a chair. And then, rrr. Well, of course, we didn't hear a word that was preached. We were all convulsing in laughter as we listened to that. But there was this couple with a tenacious little girl. And, you know, some children are tenacious. She, like most mothers in those days, carried an enforcer in her purse, a hairbrush. My mother carried a hairbrush in her purse. All she had to do was open it and show it to me. somehow or other, I think they had another couple with them. They got down toward the front and in the center of an aisle, and the sections were big like ours are. If you're in the center, it's not easy to get out. And she used the term to her little girl, now, if you don't behave, I'm going to pop you. Well, the little girl heard, bop you. You know, I'm going to bop you. And the little girl started misbehaving. She leaned over and whispered, and you could hear all of this in that auditorium. And she said, if you don't behave, I'm going to pop you. Well, she looked around. She thought, she can't do that. You know, we're stuck right here in the middle of this. She misbehaves, and so her mother gets up, takes her, pushes, start putting out, and the little girl starts screaming at the top of her lungs, don't bop me, Mommy, don't bop me. All the way up the aisle, don't bop me, don't bop me. And then the restroom was downstairs, and you could hear all the way down the steps, don't bop me, Mommy, don't bop me. She bopped her, you know. But if that's all that you do is you bop your children, you're not doing it the way that God said to do it. Bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Yes, you discipline them, but you also motivate them. And you actually, the psychiatrists tell us that approbation, approval, is more powerful than punishment with children. when they grow into young people, they're no longer little children, but they're not yet adults. It's hard to be a teenager. Remember that? Remember what it was like? I mean, you're not a child anymore, but you're not grown. You're not an adult either. When Luther wrote to Christian parents, admitted that to spare the rod is to spoil the child, but he said, keep an apple beside the rod and give to him when he does well. Well, the rod is the nurture, the apple is the admonition, or that word of encouragement. How long has it been, now this I can say to fathers my age, how long has it been since you told your son you're proud of him? That's almost like the question, how long has it been since you had any Wolf Brand chili? Well, that's too long. this nurture and admonition is not parents today, they have all kinds of written resources and internet resources on how to raise children that we didn't have when we were having our, there was only one book on raising children when our first child was born, that was Dr. Spock. That was the only book. Now there's shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of them. But this nurture and admonition isn't supposed to be according to Dr. Spock. It's supposed to be according to the Lord. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I love the way that our pastor states it when he dedicates a child. Do you promise, he says to the parents, to bring this child up? He doesn't use the words nurture and admonition, but bring this child up to love Jesus. And to live according to Jesus' commands. And they say, I do there. You can't bring children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord unless you are a Christian. And you become a Christian by repenting of your sin. Since Paul's saying that, quit doing this. By trusting in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, by asking Christ to forgive you and come into your heart. The first step toward bringing children upright is to get right with God yourself. And I love the emphasis our church is putting on young couples because that's where it starts. Children have a right to live. Children have a right to live in happiness. And children have a right to live in the Lord. I mean, when you know, God created the first children. Now, they were grown when because I have seen some grown people that are like children. But Adam and Eve, you know, here they are in a grown body, but they've just been created. But he gets us to help with the rest of them. You have that direct creation of Adam and Eve, but it is a procreation from that point that we actually enter into God's plan for this planet and for this universe, and we produce the children. And the children have a right to have Christian parents. You know, I remember when I was a teenager, you'd hear these testimonies from people who had been off into sin and had been criminals and broken the law, drunkards, alcoholics, and then suddenly they were saved. And everybody, man, isn't that wonderful? Well, let me tell you what's more wonderful than that. It's a child who can say, my mother and father took me to church, and I became a Christian when I was about 9 or 10 years old. I've been living with the Lord ever since. I wish you could, Ruby is threatened to do it. I haven't let her do it yet, but I wish you could sit in on my Saturday class. You know, we're trying to, in fact, the president asked me several years ago, said, why isn't our school growing? We just kind of stuck there around 300 students. Why aren't we growing? And that's a big school, by the way, in Christian schools. But why are we just stuck there? I said, well, you know, most of our students are adults. I mean, most of them are not coming right out of high school to go to Crestwood College. Some do. An increasing number are doing that. But for the most part, it's people. I think at one time our average age was like, the average was like 27. And those are people that are working. They can't go to school all day. So we created the MDiv on Mondays, where they can just come on Mondays, and we offer all those courses where they can get a Master of Divinity degree just by coming on Mondays. Most pastors can do that, too, if they need that. And then we created the Mac at Night, a Master's degree in counseling that all the classes are offered at night. We are the only Christian school I know of that has a board-certified MD psychiatrist who heads up our counseling program. And he came out of Myron Minrith Clinic here, David Henderson. He is quite something. Graduate of Cedarville University, which is a Baptist school up in Ohio, and used to preach on the streets when he was in college. He's a personal soul winner, and takes the Bible and applies it to counseling. And yet, by the time those students get through there, they will have met all of the requirements to become licensed professional counselors. Isn't that wonderful to be able to put people into that occupation from our school with that? And they have to take all the religious courses that the rest of us do out there. Interesting to hear that. And then we took a survey of the students, and students said, I wish, particularly the school teachers. When I came back to the college 11 years ago, and I was academic vice president, we had a Master of Arts in Christian Leadership. And it had in it several tracks. One was pastoral, and one was educational, but it said religious education. It was for Minister of Education in the church. And I said, why don't we take the word religious off that and just make it an education track? We might attract some of these Christian school teachers who are teaching in the public schools. And I think Wiley was the first independent school district that said, yeah, we'll pay for that. You know, a public school teacher can get his or her master's degree paid for by the independent school district in most school districts. We now have them from Dallas and 4 or 5 other places. Well, those people are teaching all week. Now, Janice was a teacher. It takes time. You can't teach all day and then go to school all night. I mean, you cannot do that. It just takes too much out of you to do that. And so they said, can we have Saturday classes? So they started Saturday classes. And then they asked me to teach one of them. Boy, was Ruby skeptical of that, you know. 8 hours from 8 in the morning until 5 o'clock. We're the only people in the building. In fact, the janitor comes and opens the building at 7:30, and then he locks it and leaves at 8:30. And so we have to give people our cell phone numbers, because if you go out for lunch, you're going to have to call one of us who didn't go out to come let you in the door, because it's locked there. So Ruby said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to get the students to teach the class. That's what I'm going to do. I said, I don't have a voice to lecture for 8 hours. And I can tell you right now, by about the second hour, they'd be asleep. I've watched people all my preaching life asleep when I was preaching and teaching. But so we only meet 5 weeks. And the first week we're meeting, telling them what we're going to do, and we teach through the Sermon on the Mount, because that's going to be the scripture that they read out loud every week in preparation for class. And they already know what the final exam is going to be. They're going to have to write Matthew 5 through 7 from memory. I had a guy tell me yesterday, I just cannot memorize that much. I said, well, divide it up into sections and just memorize one section and then another one and then another one and then another one. You know, but they don't know it, but I'm going to have them choose a section to write out instead of the whole thing. But so we all had to get the same translation of the Bible, got the New King James Version. None of them had that, so they're used to using the NIV or the New American Standard or the New English Bible or something like that. But what I do is I just, we read, for 3 weeks, we read one book a week. Start out with Whitney's book on spiritual disciplines. And then this past week, it was J. Oswald Sanders' book on spiritual leadership. Fantastic book. And then next week, we're reading a 14th century book, Thomas A. Kempis, The Imitation of Christ. Every time I teach that course, I ask the students, should we take that old book out? Oh, no, don't take that book out. Keep that book in there. And then I just assign the chapters out. We only have 8 students in there. You have chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then we start with 9, 10, 11, 12. So they'll have 2 or 3 chapters, and they are to summarize those chapters in there. And I am telling you, it's a blessing to sit in there and listen to. These are master's level students, and they can do that. But I wish you could have been in there. I have a Korean who reads English but has a hard time speaking it. He can read it. Yeyoung is his name. And then I have a pastor, a Hispanic pastor, who has a golden bass voice and speaks perfect English. An amazing, amazing guy. And then I have, this Korean is a youth and music director in a Korean church here in Dallas. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of Koreans in this city. And then I have a minister of music who used to be out in one of those cities out there near where you all live, near Colleyville. I forget which one, but out beyond there. And then he's just now moved to Florida. He lacks one course. He has moved back here for a month to take my course in there. And he is a classical guitarist, Keith Cooper. Anybody? You want to be blessed? Google Keith Cooper and listen to him. He's quite something. He holds concerts all over the country, and he's minister of music in a church down there in Naples, Florida. And then I have the youth director from the First Baptist Church of Canton, Trey Holmes. Wonderful, wonderful, big, tall, handsome guy, and just a big tech raised out in Odessa in the oil fields out there, you know, and so he knows how to work. I bet he's a tremendous youth director. I asked him, I said, did you play basketball? He said, no. I said, I worked out in oil fields, you know, from the time I was 16 on, I worked out there. Then I have the man that leads our chapel services, Curtis James. Anybody remember that name? All right. You know Gary, James, and Vicky? That's his mother and daddy. He was raised in this church. And he is one fantastic worship leader. And he's in there. And then I have a woman who for 7 years has worked in the Early Childhood Development Center at the University of Texas at Dallas. One of the most articulate people I've ever listened to in my life. And they bring out things that I didn't catch. And they weave their own personal life and testimony. This is how God spoke to me through it. It's just fantastic, fantastic in there. I was worried about Ye Young because he speaks broken English. He's saying, what's the word? What's the word? So we're all trying to give him a word there, you know, trying to remember it. But characteristics of a spiritual leader is discipline. Discipline is so important in the Christian life. And, of course, with them, I'm having them keep a journal. And they have to have a quiet time every morning, 7 days a week. And then record it in this journal and turn this journal in. And many of them have never had that. They'd read the Bible along the way, but not on a daily basis where they have a set time to be with God. And these books emphasize the discipline of doing that. And this young man said, my father raised me with a lot of discipline. And one of the things was he taught me never to drink beer, never to drink alcohol. I said, was your father a pastor? Yes, he was. Yeah. And he said, all of the Christians in Korea drink beer. And he went to the fine arts school there for music. I bet he is a talented musician. And went for 3 years. And he said there were 80 students in that school. It's a very elite school. And he said every Friday night at 10 o'clock, they'd go to the pub. And it was just a requirement. You had to go. And so I went with them and said, and the seniors always pushed the beer in front of the freshmen, you know. And he said, I always said, no, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. He said, there were 80 people in that school, were 79 that would drink. And they'd drink from midnight till 6 in the morning. I mean, they'd be binge drinking. And most of them were ministers of music in Korean churches over there. But which he was, but he said that discipline that my father built into me, he said, I thought he was very, very strict with me, but now I appreciate it because it's helped me. And told how one of the girls in his church said, you know, I noticed that you didn't drink. Everybody else was drinking. And if you think that peer pressure is something here in the United States with teenagers, you ought to see it over in the Orient. I mean, it's, you know, you got to fit in. You got to do it. You don't want to lose face. But he just said no. And that came from parents that brought him up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Wonderful, wonderful things. Well, there it is. God help us to do it. Amen. Brother Jack.